I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Jill Robbins, and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
International refugee laws ban the return of people to countries where their lives may be in danger. But refugees, aid groups, and Thai officials themselves say Thailand still sends thousands of people who fled violence by Myanmar's military back home. Since its takeover of the country last year, Myanmar's military has killed more than 1,700 people and arrested more than 13,000. The military has also tortured children, women, and men. The refugees are now unsure of their future. Many live on both sides of the river dividing the two countries as fighting continues in Myanmar. Hay is a young woman from Myanmar. She and her family now live in the tall grasses near the river on the Thai border. Like thousands of others, Hay left her village for neighboring Thailand after the military's takeover. Returning to Myanmar would place her and her family at risk of death. But that is what Thai officials tell them to do at least once a week, she told the Associated Press. The Thai government does not want to hurt its relationship with Myanmar's ruling military. When they told us to go back, we cried and explained why we can't go back home, Hay said. Sometimes we cross back to the Myanmar side of the river, but I have not returned to the village at all. Thailand has not signed on to the United Nations Refugee Convention. It claims Myanmar's refugees return home voluntarily. Thailand also says it has followed international laws that say that people must not be returned to a country where they would face torture, punishment, or harm. As the situation on the Myanmar side of the border improved, Thai officials helped citizens voluntarily return to Myanmar, said the spokesperson for Thailand's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Thousands of people from Myanmar have sought refuge in Tak province. The governor there said many crossed illegally when there was no fighting. We had to send them back as the laws said, the governor said. When they faced the threats and crossed here, we never refused to help them. The International Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says that 48,000 people have fled to neighboring countries since the Myanmar military's takeover. The agency says Thai government sources estimate around 17,000 have sought safety in Thailand. But the Thai Myanmar Border Command Center reports that only around 2,000 are currently living in Thailand. Those fleeing the fighting between the Myanmar military and ethnic minority groups must wade across the rivers dividing the two countries. They carry belongings and babies on top of their shoulders. They must live in crowded, poorly kept shelters made from plastic covering and bamboo. Refugees and aid groups say that when fighting stops, Thai officials send them back. Myanmar's military, meanwhile, continues to take over villages, burn homes, and set landmines. I have seen some of them being forced to get in a car, get off at the river, and cross over to the other side, said Fo Tingyan of the aid group, the Overseas Irrawaddy Association. I'm Dan Novak.
A court in Turkey ruled Thursday to suspend the trial of 26 Saudis accused of the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. The case is being sent to Saudi Arabia, raising fears that the suspects will not face punishment for the crime. Khashoggi was a writer and critic of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He was killed on October 2, 2018, at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. He had gone into the diplomatic offices to get documents required for his planned marriage to a Turkish woman. But he never left the building. Turkish officials alleged that Khashoggi was killed and then cut into pieces inside the consulate by a team of Saudi agents. The group included security officers and individuals who worked for the Crown Prince. Khashoggi's body has not been found. The Turkish court decided to send the trial to Saudi Arabia, although human rights groups warn that the Saudis will cover up the killing. The decision also comes as Turkey is trying to reduce tensions between the two countries. Hatice Cengiz, Khashoggi's fiancée, who was waiting outside the consulate on October 2nd, said she was surprised and saddened by the decision, calling it political. She told Reuters, "Saudi Arabia is a country where we know there is no justice. No one expects a just decision there." Human rights supporters had also urged Turkey not to send the case to Saudi Arabia. They argued there would be no justice for Khashoggi in Saudi courts. Emma Sinclair Webb is the director for the New York-based Human Rights Watch for Turkey. She told the Associated Press that the decision opens the way for other countries to commit assassinations on Turkish territory and get away with it. The Saudi government did not immediately answer requests for comment. At the time of the incident, Turkey had a sound recording of the actions inside the consulate and shared the evidence with the world. In December 2018, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan also said Turkey would not hand over evidence to the Saudis because they could destroy it. "They think the world is dumb. This nation isn't dumb, and it knows how to hold people accountable," Erdogan said at the time. A U.S. intelligence report released last year said Prince Mohammed bin Salman had approved the operation to kill or capture Khashoggi. But the Saudi government denied any involvement by the Crown Prince and rejected the report's findings. Turkey started the trial in absentia against the 26 Saudi suspects, including two former aides of the prince in 2020. Saudi Arabia had rejected requests that they be sent out of the country to face trial. Some of the men involved were put on trial, hidden from the public in Riyadh. A Saudi court then sentenced five mid-level officials and individuals to 20-year prison terms. At first, the Saudi court had ordered the death penalty, but it reduced the punishment after Khashoggi's son, Salah, announced that he forgave the defendants. Three others were sentenced to shorter jail terms. I'm Jill Robbins.
Imagine you want to describe your life. You might begin with where and when you were born. In last week's report, Describing Your Life, we showed you how one of the most famous books of 20th century literature, Midnight's Children, described the beginning of a life. In this week's Everyday Grammar, we use a story from one of our readers, Luna, to teach you about subject-verb agreement, vocabulary, verb forms, and more. Here is the story that we received from Luna.
My name is Luna. I was born in Seoul, in South Korea. I have heard that my parent was very delighted for getting their first child. 3 years later, my father had left home to make money. Mother, my younger sister, and me always have been missed and waited for him to return home. But it was last time since he had left home.
Luna wrote an excellent story. It was very moving. Her first sentences are clear and direct.
My name is Luna. I was born in Seoul, in South Korea.
The next sentence needs a small change in subject-verb agreement.
I have heard that my parent was very delighted for getting their first child.
Luna wrote, "My parent was very delighted," but we generally use the plural form parents and corresponding be verb agreement, were. In other words, my parents were very delighted. In general, we use the structure to have when talking about children. So, we can update the sentence to say the following.
I have heard that my parents were very delighted to have their first child.
Luna's next sentence says this.
3 years later, my father had left home to make money.
We recommend changing 3 years later to 3 years after my birth, as well as changing the verb form to the simple past. My father left home to make money. Had left would still be understood, but we usually use this verb form to describe an action that is completed before another action, as in, he had left by the time I arrived. So this could be the updated sentence.
3 years after my birth, my father left home to make money.
In the story's next sentence, we recommend changing some of the pronouns.
Mother, my younger sister, and me always have been missed and waited for him to return home.
We recommend replacing the pronoun me with I. In general, we use the object pronoun after the verb miss, as in missed him or missed her. We could change the sentence to the following.
Mother, my younger sister, and I always missed him and waited for him to return home.
This was the final line.
But it was last time since he had left home.
We recommend including a determiner before last time, as in, but it was the last time. We can simplify the rest of the line a bit further. The word since is not necessary, and the simple past works well in this situation. The line could say,
but it was the last time he left home.
Here is the complete story with the changes that we recommend.
My name is Luna. I was born in Seoul, in South Korea. I have heard that my parents were very delighted to have their first child. 3 years after my birth, my father left home to make money. Mother, my younger sister, and I always missed him and waited for him to return home. But it was the last time he left home.
Thank you for sharing your story, Luna. We wish you continued success in your English studies. For all of our other readers and listeners, we hope that you have learned something from the suggestions we gave. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. We begin the story of President Lyndon Johnson.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lyndon Baines Johnson became America's 36th president suddenly.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
On November 22nd, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy and Johnson, his vice president, were in Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was shot as his open car drove through the city. Within a few hours, Johnson was sworn into office. The swearing-in took place on the presidential plane, Air Force One, at Dallas's Love Field. The plane returned to Andrews Air Force Base near Washington, carrying the new president and the body of the former president. At Andrews, President Johnson read a brief statement. He ended with these words, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." Before he was vice president, LBJ had served for many years in the Senate and the House of Representatives. He grew up in small towns in Texas. He finished high school at age 15. He traveled and worked for a few years before he entered Southwest Texas State Teachers College. There, he was a student leader and a political activist. In 1931, a newly elected congressman asked Johnson to work for him as his secretary in Washington. 4 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt appointed Johnson as Texas Director of Roosevelt's National Youth Administration. 2 years after that, in 1937, Johnson won a special election for a seat in the House of Representatives. He served in the House for 12 years. When the United States entered World War II, Johnson was the first member of Congress at that time to volunteer for active duty. After the war, he ran for the Senate, where he also served for 12 years. Johnson loved politics and became an expert in the operations of government. He would need all of that knowledge as president of a nation facing problems near and far. When Johnson took office, communist forces were fighting South Vietnamese troops supported by the United States. Also, there were continuing worries about nuclear war with the Soviet Union. At home, there was racial conflict. Many Americans were out of work, and there was the threat of a railroad strike. Johnson began his presidency by working hard for legislation that President Kennedy had proposed. Johnson had voted against civil rights legislation when he served in the Senate, but now he urged Congress to support the idea, and Congress agreed. The 1964 Civil Rights Act barred discrimination against minorities in jobs and in restaurants and other businesses.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
The president said that such a situation could not continue in America. To treat people unfairly because of their race, he said, violated the Constitution and the idea of democracy. Lyndon Johnson succeeded in getting Congress to pass more civil rights legislation in 1965 and 68.
Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than the duty we have to ensure that right.
Many southern states used so-called literacy tests as a way to deny blacks the right to vote.
The Negro citizen may go to register only to be told that the day is wrong, or the hour is late, or the official in charge is absent. And if he persists, and if he manages to present himself to the registrar, he may be disqualified because he did not spell out his middle name or because he abbreviated a word on the application. And if he manages to fill out an application, he is given a test. The registrar is the sole judge of whether he passes this test. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write.
The Civil Rights Act of 1965 said states could not prevent citizens from voting just because they could not read very well. The 1968 law barred discrimination against blacks in housing. Johnson was from the South. That and his ability to persuade people helped him get Southern conservatives in Congress to support the civil rights legislation. He also had other ideas for a better America. He called his plan the Great Society. He talked about it in a speech at the University of Michigan.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents.
Johnson launched the War on Poverty, a series of bills designed to help the poor. But his efforts to pay for social programs and a war overseas led to inflation. Vietnam was not the only place where Johnson used military force. In 1965, he sent more than 20,000 troops to intervene in the Dominican Republic. He worried that a revolution could lead to a communist takeover of that Caribbean nation. Lyndon Johnson served the last 14 months of President Kennedy's term. Then, in 1964, he ran for a full term. The Democratic Party strongly supported him and accepted his choice of Hubert Humphrey for vice president. Humphrey was a liberal senator from the state of Minnesota. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a difficult time choosing their presidential candidate. Delegates at the party's nominating convention finally chose Barry Goldwater. Goldwater was a strongly conservative senator from Arizona.
Certainly, simple honesty is not too much to demand of men in government. And let our republicanism so focused and so dedicated not be made fuzzy and futile by unthinking and stupid labels. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The Republican candidate for vice president was William Miller, a congressman from New York State. Americans voted in November of 1964. Lyndon Johnson won more than 60% of the popular vote. Still, he had hoped for an even bigger victory. He wanted proof that Americans were voting for him and not the shadow of John Kennedy. In his inaugural speech, Johnson said his great society would never be finished. It would keep growing and improving.
I do not believe that the great society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again, but always trying and always gaining.
In 1965, he won congressional approval of Medicare, a health insurance program for Americans age 65 and older. President Harry Truman had called for such a plan 20 years earlier. Johnson presented Truman and his wife Bess with Medicare cards numbers 1 and 2. Under Johnson, Congress also approved Medicaid, a health care program for the poor and disabled. In 1967, President Johnson appointed the nation's first black justice to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall. Around the country, President Johnson faced growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. More and more American troops were dying. Lyndon Johnson may have wanted to be remembered as a great president, but the war came to redefine his presidency.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.